Jerry TechCast, episode number 56, an interview with Mark Fisher on the Spring Integration Framework. The TechCast are brought to you by Chariot Solutions. For open source application development in Java, mobile, integration, Rails, and more, Chariot can help you build better software. Visit us on the web at www.chariotsolutions.com. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Ken Rimple. Mark Fisher is an engineer within the SpringSource division of VMware. A committer on the core Spring framework, he's the lead of the Spring integration team. He also works on a number of other projects, such as Spring AMQP and the Spring Blaze DS integration project. Gordon Dickens and I spoke to him today about Spring integration, which is coming up on a version 2.0 release. VMware is a Chariot Solutions consulting and education partner. Mark Fisher, welcome to the Chariot TechCast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Mark, you're an engineer at VMware, SpringSource division of VMware, and you're the lead of the Spring integration team and also committing on the core Spring framework. So talk to us a little bit. We're going to talk today about Spring integration, but before we get started with that, let's just kind of discuss how you came to the Spring framework and how you became involved with SpringSource.
Okay, sure. I think, like a lot of developers, my first exposure to Spring was through Rod Johnson's first book, the Expert 101 J2E Design and Development, where Spring Framework was basically used as for all of the examples within that book. Actually, what later became the Spring Framework was used in that book. And at the within a couple years of that, I'd been using the Spring Framework. I ran into Keith Donald at a conference. I expressed interest in joining the team, if there was one. At that time, they had actually just recently started the company, which at that time was called Interface 21, which eventually became SpringSource. So this was at the end of 2005. And I went to the Spring Experience that year. I met the rest of the team, and then I started working on January 1st, 2006, actually, within Interface 21. And it's been, you know, no looking back ever since.
Yeah, absolutely. So you worked a lot with, I guess, contributing to the core framework for a while, right?
That's right. Yeah, in the beginning, everyone was kind of doing a lot of consulting and training. Even Rod Johnson would handle a few of our core Spring training courses back in that day. And so, you know, everyone was even contributing to the framework, but also spending quite a bit of time on the road as well. I was primarily doing training and consulting. Started towards the middle of 2006 to really contribute to Spring Framework itself, and then became really pretty heavily involved in Spring for version 2.5 with a lot of the annotation support for dependency injection. And that's kind of what led up to the Spring integration project being started in 2007 as an official project.
So let's kind of just briefly cover what Spring integration is and does. You know, certainly if you hear it from the name, it's an integration piece or framework on top of Spring. But, you know, how was it developed? What was it designed to do? And how might you use it on a project at a high level?
Okay. Well, I usually describe Spring integration, the shortest description possible, I think, is that it's basically the enterprise integration patterns meet the Spring framework. A lot of people are familiar with the book Enterprise Integration Patterns, which was written by Gregor Hope and Bobby Wolf in 2003, 2004, I think it came out. And that book describes a number of different messaging patterns. It starts with kind of pipes and filters as the general approach, and then it goes into more specific things like a message channel, a message router, a message transformer, a message filter, and then various adapters, channel adapters, messaging gateways. And basically what I noticed is that there were some similarities between that, the descriptions in that book and things that you could do with the Spring framework, like the Spring support for JMS. But that was just one specific case. We tried to make that a little bit more generic, and then building on top of what was available in the Spring framework, exposing those EIP concepts with Spring integration itself. So I often say that it's made up of two primary categories. On one hand, it's an embedded message bus, which means that it's actually within a Spring application context, you can do messaging in the same way that you can actually do eventing in a Spring application even prior to Spring integration. You can send an event and some other component can receive that event, and you've got the ability to connect to these components because they're all part of the same container, and that's one of the advantages of a new version of Control Container, is that these components are managed. We just kind of took that one step further, and instead of just eventing, we added channels, and then you can have producers and consumers that aren't connected directly. I think that's the really most important point of any messaging architecture. They're decoupled because of those channels. But that it can all happen within a Spring application. So even if you're not really doing any enterprise integration per se, you're not connecting systems, you're not communicating over message middleware, you can still have a very lightweight application that is message-driven in its architecture just internally. So that's a big part of the framework, and pretty much everything you see in our core jar file is related to that functionality. The second part is all of the various adapters. And so we have adapters for the things that you would expect, like Java Message Service, web services, file systems, all of those kinds of things. And then we've also added quite a number of adapters in the 2.0 timeframe.
Yeah, Mark, this is Gordon. I know 2.0 is currently in milestone 7, I believe. And so what's the timeline? Are we we're looking for an official release on 2.0 and what significant, I guess, features are there between 1.0 and 2.0? I mean, maybe that's a broad question, but.
Sure, it is. But it's good timing because we are actually wrapping up the first release candidate for 2.0 right now. As you probably know, the Spring One conference is next week. So our goal is actually to have the release candidate available at Spring One, in time for Spring One. So it's either going to be the end of this week or Monday of next week, right before the conference starts. And that's going to be our first release candidate. Ideally, we would be able to go straight to GA as the next release within a couple weeks. But if there's a need for a second release candidate for anything that gets reported against the first one, then we'll have that within a couple weeks. And then so we're looking at basically, sometime within a month, probably having the GA release of 2.0. So that's the plan. As far as the new features in 2.0, the one thing I like to say first is what has stayed the same, because I think for a lot of people that's an important part of a framework, is how much breakage will there be when I upgrade to 2.0 if I've been using 1.0. And it's always a balance to strike when you want to add some new functionality that just really is going to require something to break, then sometimes it's worth it. But we've tried to maintain at the core of the framework really very, very little change. There's a lot of extension, but there's really nothing that's been removed. Luckily, the core model, we really took some time to design that as simple as it could be, but also very extensible. So the things like the message object itself isn't changed because we only have a payload and a map of headers. So that's, luckily very future-proof. The message channel hasn't changed. The message handler, which is the core interface for any consumer that subscribes to a channel, that hasn't changed. The endpoints that manage the lifecycle for all of these components haven't changed. All of that stuff is exactly the same in 2.0 as it was in 1.0. We have added a number of new features, and I guess the first category of feature, I would say, are the things that we can do now that we're built on top of Spring 3.0. So that's probably the biggest, most obvious first thing when you look at Spring Integration 2.0 is it's built on Spring 3 as a baseline. Spring 3, as most people know, is the first version of Spring that requires Java 5. And by requiring Java 5, it makes it much easier to deal with anything that is based on generics parameterization, all of these features that are in Java 5 that can now be in the core itself of Spring. So we have support for several things that are new in Spring 3.0 that actually play a major role in Spring integration. One of them is the task scheduling support. So Spring 3.0 provides a task scheduler, whereas it used to only have the task executor. And the reason that can be added now is that it requires the ability to have a future as a return value, which is a Java 5 feature. So that couldn't be added until Spring 3.0. But now that that's supported there, we were actually able to remove all of the scheduling code from Spring integration. In fact, a lot of the features in Spring Core came from Spring integration. So this is another example where we're not only building on Spring, but we're actually contributing some things back to the core framework.
Very cool.
Scheduling was a big part of that. Along with the scheduler, we have another strategy, which is called a trigger, which is really just a simple way to determine the next execution time for a given task that's been submitted to the scheduler. And this is something that was I'm blanking out on the JSR number now, but I used to know. There was a JSR that sort of disappeared from the face of the earth that was supposed to be enterprise scheduling, kind of the next version of Java Util Concurrent that added something like what our trigger does. And it's just sort of seemed to lost momentum. So we have this thing in Spring that is pretty close to what that accomplished. And it allows us to have different mechanisms for the scheduler. So if you're running in a system where you need to use Common J for managing all your threads, then you can do that just like you could do with Spring's task executor instruction. So that's something that we build on. We also build on the Spring expression language. This is one of the most obvious new features in Spring Integration 2.0 is the support for the expression language. It allows you to use for any filter or router or splitter where the logic is actually really simple. You don't even have to define an object anymore. You don't have to create a Java bean to encapsulate that functionality. Instead, you can just provide an expression directly in the configuration. So the Spring expression language support is a really big feature. And the other one is the conversion service in Spring 3, which is pretty straightforward. You have, type X comes in, type Y goes out. There are a lot of places where that can be used. It's actually used inside of the expression language. So anytime you're trying to invoke a method and the argument that you pass to that method might not be the right type, but it can be converted by the conversion service, then it adds a lot of flexibility and sort of gives you this layer of duck typing in a way on top of strongly typed Java code that you're invoking through that expression. So that's very useful in Spring integration. We also have support for this conversion service in one of the EIP patterns that we've introduced, which is called data type channel. You can specify the type that a channel requires for the payload of messages that are sent to it. And if the message is sent doesn't yet have that type, it can try to convert it with the conversion service. And that way, everything on the other side of the channel is guaranteed to have that type, because if it fails to convert, it's going to throw an exception to the sender. So those are a couple examples. We also have Spring 3's REST template is now the basis for the HTTP adapter. That means that you can reuse things like the URI placeholders. You can have an expression. Actually, so this is kind of a combination of everything. The message comes in. You can have a spell expression that evaluates against that message to replace something in one of the property placeholders for the URI that you're about to invoke. And so that's quite a bit of stuff that you can do without having to actually write any code. So that's kind of the first things that come to mind, at least for what we use from Spring 3.0. There's also a number of new enterprise integration patterns in 2.0. We have support for message history, which is really useful anytime you need to do tracking of the message, because a message might be going across a number of different channels. Some of those channels might actually have asynchronous handoffs. So as a message crosses, say, multiple threads within a flow, it's very hard to reassemble where it came from, because you're kind of out of the traditional model of a stack trace at that point. But message history is something that stays with the message, even when it crosses these thread boundaries, as a header. So every component that the message crosses is capable of contributing to this message history. And when you look back, you'll see all of the components that has passed. And it also stores the timestamp. So that's pretty useful information anytime you're doing any kind of monitoring. Also related to monitoring, we have the control bus, which is basically just a way to take Spring's support for exporting JMX MBeans for any of the components that are being managed by the container, but applying that specifically to the Spring integration components. So we've got a lot of JMX metrics that are available now on the various channels and handlers, and all of that can be exposed through the whatever JMX console you're using to connect to the MBean server that is that these messages, these objects are being registered with. There's another enterprise integration pattern called the message store. Message store is really a very simple strategy. We basically, it looks like a map of messages, but it gives us a point of extension for anything stateful within Spring integration. So the most common thing would be like an aggregator. If you have a splitter followed by an aggregator, that aggregator needs to hold on to messages until it satisfies some completion condition. And the way that it stores those is by putting them into a message store. If your system crashes, then you can start it back up and pick up where you left off as long as that message store is backed by something persistent. Another advantage of that is that if you're running in a, say, in a clustered environment, you have multiple nodes, as long as they're sharing the same message store, then you can actually have multiple concurrent processing of the same aggregation across different nodes of the cluster. So you get some kind of load balancing that way. The message store is also useful inside of the message channel. So you can have a message channel that is actually persisting messages for you. And if the message store itself is transactional, then that channel would be a transactional channel. We have an implementation for message store that's backed by JDBC. But this is also an area we're going to be adding a lot of different implementations in the future. Spring is actually, the Spring framework is starting to expand into a lot of different data storage solutions. So in the future, you can expect to see a message store for various NoSQL implementations, blob storage implementations that fit really well with this model. And we already have a prototype version in our sandbox of a message store implemented in Gemfire. So that's something that is important to us since VMware acquired Gemstone. We have the Gemfire-backed message store. You can run a Gemfire data grid behind your stateful components. And then the last enterprise integration pattern I wanted to mention builds directly on top of message store. It's called claim check. The way that claim check works is you drop off a message, and just like when you're checking in your bag at the hotel, you get back just a ticket. The message is stored in the message store instance that claim check references. So this allows you to do things where you might not want to be passing, if you have large message objects, you might not want to be passing the entire object around to all of the components in a pipeline. Instead, you can just make sure that the information you need is in the headers of that message for doing any kind of routing, and then run it through a claim check. The payload is then replaced with just a ticket, which happens to be just the ID to be able to look up that message. And then you can send it down the pipeline. Wherever it eventually ends up, you can have the inverse claim check lookup that converts that ticket back into the payload. And it might even be on a different system, on a different machine somewhere. It allows you to really reduce the amount of bandwidth that you're using between those systems in that case. So those are the main enterprise integration pattern features. The last category would be new adapters that we've added. So we have adapters for JDBC. We have adapters for TCP and UDP. We have JMX adapters if you need to invoke JMX operations or pull a JMX managed attribute or something like that. We have support for XMPP now, as well as Twitter and RSS feeds. We moved the FTP adapters that used to be in an extensions project. We moved those back into the core and added support for SFTP as well. And that's just a few. We've got also the AMQP adapter in progress now as well that's going to build on top of the Spring AMQP project. So I guess it was a fairly broad question, but
you saved me some talking. That's good.
Yeah, I'll pass it back to you guys for the next.
Well, it was funny that you mentioned the claim check. That we did something similar because we were loading large files into the system, so we had to actually implement Apache Jackrabbit. So we put that in there, got the token out, passed that ID around, and then went back later and pulled the data out to handle it. So
that's a perfect example. So we could, like I said, the message store interface basically just looks like a map. So we could actually add a message store implementation that does that part for you, and then you would just plug it into the claim check as a reference.
Is that backed by a database then? You'd have to configure that to be backed up by something?
Well, in the version, we have a JDBC message store implementation right now. The two that are available out of the box in the core are a JDBC version and a in-memory map version, which is the default. So if you don't register anything that's persistent, then it won't actually be persisting messages, but it'll still work with the same strategy. The JDBC version then does require that you have a database,
right.
But you can use an embedded database, or you can use any of the various databases that people typically use with
sure.
Spring applications. Something super lightweight like H2, all the way up to an Oracle cluster. We're providing different DDL scripts for actually generating the schema that would be required by that implementation.
So for people who are just getting started with this or taking, interested in it, want to know a little bit more, to configure this, I know you have like a Spring integration namespace in the XML Spring Bean config, right? Where you can wire things together. What are the ways that you can wire together these objects, so the channels to the various types of objects, the producers and consumers and such?
Well, the way most of the components, like if you look at the what I call the core EIP patterns, router, filter, transformer, and so on, those all have a pair of attributes, an input channel and output channel, and that's where you would reference the message channels by name. Then at the edge of the system, you would have your adapters, and adapters could be inbound or outbound. And we actually break them down into either channel adapters, which are literally just one-way connections that are sitting on one side of a channel, either on the inbound side or the outbound side. And then we have messaging gateways, which are request reply. So, for instance, you might have the inbound the adapter that's reading from the file system would be an inbound channel adapter because it's just pulling a file and there's no reply. Whereas you might be sending a request to a REST-based web service and expecting a reply back from that. So that would be an outbound gateway. And those would be configured on the edge. So you might have something like an inbound file adapter to channel X, and then channel X goes into a router as its input channel. Its output channel is channel Y, and then channel Y calls some other component, and eventually you get to an outbound channel adapter or an outbound messaging gateway.
And again, this is done through Spring namespaces right now, correct?
Right. We have the XML configuration through namespaces, and it builds on top of the Spring Source Tool Suite support. So the best way to use it is within Spring Source Tool Suite, because you'll get auto completion of the referenced object. So for instance, when you type input channel equals, you'll get a drop down with all the names of channels that you're able to reference from that.
With the Spring Source Tool Suite, there's been rumor that there might be a visualization component or a visualization tool coming out where I can see the flow.
Yes, there is a visualization component out. If you are using the latest version, which I guess right now I'm using 2.5 Milestone 3.
Right, yeah.
And that support is actually there, and it's enabled by default. The 2.5 final STS release should be out very soon. And this is actually there, included out of the box. The only thing that you would need for it to be enabled is to be using one of our namespaces. So for instance, if I create a standard Java Bean configuration for Spring, And then I add the integration namespace, which STS makes really easy as well. You just click a checkbox. I can add integration, and I could add, say, integration JMS support and integration file support. When I have those three namespaces in there, I'll end up with an integration graph tab in the same editor as the XML file, and palettes on the left-hand side that have the various components that can be dragged and dropped onto that screen. So you have basically the JMS palette, because I included that namespace, and the file palette, because that was included as well. And then you can connect those components. Internally, it's just writing to the same metadata model that's shared by the XML. So you can just flip to the other tab and see the XML as if you wrote it yourself. But it does give you this fully round-tripping kind of visual editor, or, you know, a lot of people might just use it for visualization of something that they created in XML.
That's awesome. I can't, now I'm excited about that when I teach the integration class next time. This is that's great
yeah,
news.
Yeah, just be able to visualize it for the students.
I didn't know it was there, and I'm like, that's coming
it
out
is
sometime.
There. Yeah, check it out. just add it and go to that tab. And you know what I think is really one of the nicest things about this is if you're building an application that uses, say, Spring Integration and Spring Batch, then you have both tabs on there. You might have all of the configuration being used together from the same core context. You have something like an integration job that sends a message that kicks off a batch job. And you click on the integration tab and you see the high-level messaging stuff. You click on the batch tab and you'll see your jobs and their steps. And then you click on the main XML tab and you see the whole big picture, or the beans graph and you see just the dependency components. So they're like different views on top of the same underlying configuration depending on what feature you're trying to focus on.
And the only reason I was asking about the different types was I know that there's a recent addition of Java config to Spring 3. And it doesn't sound like annotation config necessarily makes sense for creating these patterns. It's more of an XML-based document config. But are you looking down the road at supporting like a Java config type of approach?
Yes, we definitely are. This is actually on our roadmap for the very first version after we get 2.0 out. So we're going to have a 2.1 release that's going to be built on top of Spring 3.1. And one of the things that we're trying to do there is build more of a, I guess you could say it's sort of a fluent API for building the pipelines of components, and also just simplifying if you want to do it in Java. So I think the thing is, Spring Integration is very component centric. So the idea that you would configure a certain router, and then the way that you connect to that router is by communicating with its channel, with the input channel that's connected to it. So it's not very common that you would just have the fluent API approach where you build the whole chain together. But there are ways that we can do the bindings of components to the channels in a simpler way, based on conventions and based on something that can be shared rather than just passing a string around like you do in XML. And one of the things that's inspiring us in this direction is actually the Spring AMQP project, where we're doing this same type of thing. We have a top-level configuration class that you can extend from, and by extending that class, you inherit some methods that you can use from within your own Bean annotated methods, which use the Java config approach. And with the Spring AMQP project, we're using that to do bindings. So without going too much into AMQP itself, you basically have to bind queues to exchanges, and there might be some criteria involved. Like I bind queue foo to exchange bar, and I want it to only be invoked when it receives something that contains the string X. So I can do that by saying exchange dot from exchange dot to queue dot with, and then you pass what's called the routing key. So it's a nice fluent API for just building these bindings themselves. And I think that what we're going to be doing in Spring Integration is going to be similar to that approach.
Is that going to be something that the AMQP product or is going to be considered for maybe backing your channels with a more durable subscription, or is that a plan coming up?
Yes, we do have that. So something that is new in Spring Integration 2.0, I forgot to mention in my listing out of new features, is that with the JMS support, we not only have the kind of edge adapters. We also now have a JMS-backed message channel. So we can create a message channel that is internally referring to a JMS queue or a JMS topic. We're going to have the same type of thing with AMQP. And we also have an implementation of this already that delegates to any of the message store implementations. So you could do things like build messaging on top of a data grid, whereas the component that you're referencing from within your Spring integration application looks just like a local channel. And I think the ultimate implementation of this is going to be based on a sort of proxy mechanism. So everyone's referencing the channel by name anyways. In fact, the components, when they resolve the channel, they're going through a strategy called Channel Resolver. It looks up the channel with that name from the Spring application context in order to get that reference. So you can imagine where we would just have that name resolved to a proxy instead, and then that proxy is going to be giving us the ability to have dynamic channels. So you could take something, even at runtime, feasibly, take a local channel and convert it into a channel that's backed by AMQP, or move it from one broker to another at runtime because the real channel is being swapped out behind the proxy. So we're calling that it's something that we've been prototyping and kind of just experimenting with up to now, but it's something that we're calling the channel registry, which would just be a little bit more involved than the current version of that, which looks up the channel as a bean name in the context.
Is that going to be in 2 or is that 2.1?
This would be in 2.1.
Okay. Yeah, that's you're going to really encroach on the ESB space then when you have backed channels.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting comparison. I think I often describe Spring integration in its relation to an ESB, because some people say it's a lightweight ESB. I prefer to not really even think of it as an ESB at all, but maybe as the inversion of an ESB. So we're actually exporting these things into endpoints as opposed to your typical ESB, which is something that sits alongside your code and that you import connections from. So you're right. This actually would be, I think it gives you the ability to in development mode, in certain deployment environments where it's not necessary, you can have just the very lightweight, simplest possible channels connecting things. But you take that exact same configuration, add this registry, which basically intercepts those channel lookups and uses proxies to export them somewhere else, and now you've got an application that really fits the same space as an ESB without actually having to change any of its code.
One of the other questions we have is around, you know, rapid application development tools. So, you know, SpringRoo, Grails, both give you an incredible amount of productivity on building web applications and other things on the platform on Spring. What does Spring integration bring to that, or what will Spring integration bring to that?
Okay, actually, this is something that we've been working on, and we're planning to really focus on as soon as we get the 2.0 GA release out, which is a Roo add-on. We do have a working version of the Roo add-on right now. We're going to be doing a demo with that at Spring One next week that allows you to basically build the pipeline of your Spring integration application through Roo commands, with all of the kind of hinting and auto-completion that you get in Roo, and then also building on some of the core add-ons in Roo to do things like create the stub of your config file, bring in the Maven dependencies, all of that. So within about 10 minutes, you can actually build an application that does messaging across a number of channels and maybe uses different channel adapters, and all of those dependencies and all of those configuration files are being created for you behind the scenes. So that's going to be, you know, something that we really focus on as soon as we get 2.0 out. There's a second add-on that we're also starting to prototype, and that is going to be for creating your own adapters for Spring integration. So it's more like it will stub out the code that would be needed to plug in an adapter, and it will actually build the core of a namespace for you and the namespace handler, using all of the conventions for where these files should be located, so that ultimately you'll end up with a jar file and just a few stubs that need to be implemented, and you'll have an adapter, including namespace support. So I think that's going to be something that we hope will really help us get more community involvement, get a lot more adapters added into the community repository there. So those are two pretty exciting things we're looking at with Roo. On the Grails side, we've talked a bit with the Grails team about the way that a Grails plugin would look. And I think there are basically two different approaches from a Grails application to connect to Spring integration. One would be simply having the Spring integration channel available within your Grails application. The other would be having a messaging gateway, which is something that Spring integration supports as just an interface that we generate a proxy for, and behind the implementation of that actual proxy is doing the messaging for you. So you have what looks like just an interface, but it's a nice gateway to the messaging system that hides all of those messaging details from your code. And the ability to have that just imported directly into a Grails application where you would be able to call that method, but have the configuration when you're adding that functionality through Grails at the command line to be able to plug in what channels it's going to be connected to. So those two things have been discussed. There is actually just very recently a Spring AMQP extension for Grails that has been added, and it's actually what I envision the Spring integration Grails plugin looking like, where you just specify, in this case, a Rabbit queue name in your config file, and then you can just add a Rabbit queue inside your Grails application, and then when you call that, it's basically going to give you a send method to send messages to that queue. So it would be something very similar except with the Spring integration message channel.
So there are other activities right now around messaging workflow, anything that you're involved in that you want to talk about?
Sure. I think, you know, if you look on the forums and just sort of community feedback, we're seeing a lot of people want to build applications that use Spring integration along with some other components. So for instance, we'll often get questions where someone's using the file adapter, but then they're getting this file that is 30 gigabytes and needs to be split up into individual rows and processed. Well, we don't want to build that functionality directly into Spring integration because we already have the Spring Batch project, which handles that type of use case. We've started, Dave Sire, who's actually the lead of Spring Batch, started last year a project called Spring Batch Admin. And if you watch that project, you'll see that it's going to have a release built upon Spring integration 2.0 very quickly. He's been following along with every change, with every milestone. So he's going to very quickly be able to release the Spring Batch Admin project. And it combines Spring integration with Spring Batch so that you can have the file arrives and that sends a message, and then the message kicks off the batch job, and then the batch job does all of the processing that it needs to do with, you know, handling row by row and large commit intervals and being able to record in a database which rows were skipped for some problem, all of that stuff that batch does. So kind of having the seamless application that uses integration and batch together is something that I think is very common. And if you take that one step further, you get into more of a formal workflow where there's actually not only batch processing and messaging, but also some kind of human interaction. And this is something that we're fortunate that Dave also, he's kind of one of these people that somehow can be involved in everything. Dave is also working, he's a contributor on the team for the new activity project, which was started by some of the guys from the JBPM team. So it's a lightweight Apache licensed BPM framework called Activity with an I at the end. Dave's working with them as well as Josh Long, who's a developer advocate at SpringSource. And the basic idea is to be able to plug in what we want to do from Spring integration's perspective is plug in a gateway that kicks off an activity process. So I think the easiest way to understand this is a very simple example, but it's something that Josh Long demonstrated recently at JavaZone in Oslo, was the activity gateway in a Spring integration application. It's actually using a REST inbound channel adapter. So you send a REST request, and that kicks off the process to activate your account. And part of that is to send an email. And then the email contains another link, which is connected to the endpoint of another Spring Integration REST inbound channel adapter. So what happens is you've got this messaging flow, and then you're basically sending out a message to a user, and then that user is coming, you know, sending back in through clicking a link back a message to activate their account. And it's a really good example of a larger kind of BPM process that is designed where some of the components within that process just happen to be endpoints into Spring Integration. So it's kind of a layering effect where you have messaging in the batch processing case, you have messaging on top of batch. You might even have batch jobs that call into Spring Integration to do asynchronous handling of the workload. And then on top of all of that, you could have, if you need human interaction, something like the activity framework to drive that.
That's pretty amazing. Let's talk a little bit about your book. You're working on Spring Integration in Action, right? How's that going? Being an author, I can say, how's that going?
yeah, exactly. It's going.
We love it.
Well, you know, on the bright side, this is going to be extremely up-to-date book because we're going to have the 2.0 release, and then the book is going to cover 2.0. And I doubt if there would be any way to have a book released that quickly after the version than if it had been written at the same time that we were writing the code. That said, I probably in the future won't ever decide to write a book and a framework at the same time.
Yeah, you got me trumped there. Yeah, I'm not even writing the framework and I feel the pain. So, oh, wow.
Yeah, it's been you know, it's been a challenge to do both, but it's allowing us to really. I think it will be good for Spring Integration 2.0 users because they'll be able to access this book relatively quickly that covers their version. I know there's as a reader, there's nothing more annoying than getting a book and then everything's already out of date or there's all these features in the framework that aren't covered by the book. So it's going to be very timely from the user's perspective.
And you have a Meep out there now. It looks like it's at least we're close to half or around half of the chapters are up on the Meep. So that's manning.com/Fisher. So if you're interested in the book, go check it out there. And of course, our
Spring,
plug.
Is Spring Batch in Action is also available. I know that I guess David decided or just was smart enough to say, you know what, I'm too busy.
Yeah.
But that's in Meep as well.
Yeah. Great. Okay. And so some of the things we talked about. So to go and find out more information about Spring Integration, you go to springsource.org/spring-integration, right?
Right.
And the forums are certainly lively. Lots going on there. And activity
enterprise which integration with Spring course, which is taught all over the states, certainly, and we teach that here at Chariot.
Yeah, and also one of the other things I was going to mention was the activity site we were talking about. Activity that was activity with an i.org, right?
Okay. Yes.
All right, great. Well, Mark, so you're speaking at Spring One. I don't want to take much more of your time, but what are you talking about, Spring One? I would guess it would involve Spring Integration.
Yes, that's one of the things I'll be talking about. So I think I have three sessions at Spring One. One of them is covering Spring Integration, new features in 2.0. That's where we'll also be demoing the Rue add-on that I mentioned. So it will be very much a demo-driven presentation, very light on the slides. Basically, all of that stuff that I mentioned when asked about what's new in 2.0, I'll be showing examples of as many of those things as I possibly can, as well as the Rue add-on. So it should be a pretty active presentation. I'm also doing a session with Dave Sire that's called Concurrency and Distributed Applications with Spring. That one is going to be extremely broad. We're going to be talking about some, just starting with like basic concurrency features in Java itself, quickly getting into what you can do within Spring for especially features in Spring 3.0, like the task scheduling that I mentioned, and asynchronous proxies, which we also added with annotation and XML support in Spring 3.0. We'll be going all the way from there to kind of using messaging with Spring Integration, in this case just at a very high level, how it can interact with Spring Batch, and then how you would build these applications that actually are distributable up to cloud scale environments. So that should be
kind of a whirlwind tour. And then the last session that I'm doing is on the new Spring AMQP project. I'll be doing that with a member of the Rabbit MQ team, as well as Mark Pollack, who is my co-lead on Spring AMQP. He works on the Spring.net project as well, and a lot of the new Spring data stuff that we have in the works. So the Spring AMQP project is, for people that are familiar with Spring's JMS support, it's the same type of approach for using AMQP, where you have message listener containers and an AMQP template. All of the stuff that looks very, very much like the JMS support, we'll be going through that in detail and starting with a general introduction to AMQP so people understand kind of what it is and how it compares to JMS. What are the differences between the different messaging models?
Oh, cool. I'll have to go to all three of those. That's definitely the concurrency thing I could use a little guidance on, but that would be good to see all that stuff.
Yeah, it should be fun.
Yeah.
All right, great.
I will say this about Spring integration. And one of the things I tell people, they go, why should I use Spring integration? And what I usually tell people is that, you can do your configuration of your process in XML and not have to recompile the code to rewire the whole data path, the whole messaging path. So you can actually rewire routers and transformers into configuration path and restart without having to rebuild the entire system. And I call it the graduate level of messaging. You start with JMS, and that's great, and then you take the training wheels off, and you can really wire in some real enterprise-level configurability. So it's really just that whole reconfiguration of the messaging flow that helps people, I think, go, oh, okay, great. There's some significant benefit.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Adding that level of abstraction gives you the ability, like you said, it's just like JMS, and it even looks like JMS from the Spring configuration perspective, but since it's just a generic message channel, it might not be JMS on the other side. It might be HTTP, it might be XMPP, it might be Twitter, and it's very easy to change between those without affecting any code.
And that was one thing you mentioned earlier about the developers. You could have a very simple deliver it out to me, just prints it out in a log file or whatever you want to do,
right?
And then move up, or even use Maven profiles to switch what you're doing in test versus production, things like that. So neat stuff.
Exactly.
Really great. Okay. Well, listen, thanks so much, Mark, for taking the time. This is a really good interview, and I think it opened a lot of good topics around Spring integration, hopefully demystified it for some people.
Hopefully so.
All right. Thanks again.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye now.
Thanks to Mark Fisher from SpringSource, a division of VMware, for taking the time to talk about Spring integration today. You can see Mark at Spring One next week in Chicago. Learn more about Mark's upcoming book, Spring Integration in Action, by visiting manning.com/Fisher website at springsource.org/spring-integration. Thanks to Chariot's Gordon Dickens for being my co-host today. He'll be speaking about Spring Roo at One Dev Day Detroit, along with speakers such as Diane Marsh and people from a wide range of projects. For more information, visit www.semiug.org and click on the One Dev Day Detroit 2010 link. The TechCast is brought to you by Chariot Solutions. We are now hiring talented developers with a background in open source Java, Spring, Hibernate, Rails, mobile application development, and other technologies. For more information or to apply for an interview, visit chariotsolutions.com and click on the careers link under the About Us menu.